Welcome to the Raging Rhino Podcast. This is podcast number 137. My name is John. One way or another, I'm gonna get you. I'll get you. Earth. That little blue marble spinning around the gigantic nuclear reactor we call the sun. Home to all your stuff, and totally indifferent to your existence. I used to watch a short-lived show on the History Channel called Life After People. The premise of the show is what would happen to the remaining buildings and infrastructure if some catastrophic event immediately wiped out all human life. Each show features some well-known structure in a city and describes over the days, decades, and even centuries what would happen as it decays and succumbs to natural forces. One of the episodes features the Alamo. Now, I'm a sixth-generation Texan, third-generation San Antonian. The Alamo is special. Its history of liberty-seeking defenders fighting what would be a losing battle against impossible odds is almost sacred to Texans. When I saw it would be featured, I just had to know what would happen if humanity was gone. Would the South Texas temperature fluctuations cause it to crumble? No. Temperature changes did factor in structures elsewhere during the series, but not here. Would the occasional heavy flooding erode the building's foundations? No, it's on a hill, so the floods probably wouldn't be a factor. What would eventually cause the Alamo to fall? The oak trees scattered across its grounds. See, the trees get trimmed back if anything gets too close to the structure. Without the caretaking, the trees would one day overtake the courtyard, the roots undermine and crack the facade, causing it to fall. According to the show, the process would probably take a couple hundred years, but it would happen. The entire series is like that, each one taking a general theme and looking at how things would fall apart. It also would look at towns that had been abandoned anywhere from a few years to a few decades prior to show how the decay begins and proceeds. I had a morbid fascination as I watched the computer animation simulate the predicted collapse of things. There was a sadness to it all. But other life continued. Yes, if this unnamed catastrophe actually happened, my cats would likely die of starvation, unless we happened to have the windows open at the time so they can get access to food and water. But the strays and the feral animals have a chance to thrive if they're able to survive the expected rabies outbreak, since there would no longer be an effort to medicate wild animals. Longhorn cattle would be expected to have a population boom, since they are better equipped to survive on their own compared to other livestock. Zoo animals that are able to escape their enclosures would thrive. Hell, one episode even proffers the idea that chimpanzees or other apes may begin to learn animal husbandry, thereby taking a step toward civilization. Thing is, though, you don't need a television show to get a taste of how nature would take over after an apocalyptic eradication of humanity. Over the past year, with the pandemic, Gina and I were pretty sedentary at first. After all, we were all told we just needed 2 weeks to flatten the curve. I put on a few pounds, or I guess I should say a few more pounds to my already overweight frame. I could feel the lethargy dragging me down. Between the reduced hours at work and later the loss of the job altogether, I decided to use that additional time to exercise more. I would go out almost every day for a walk around the neighborhood. We live in a nice little subdivision, much smaller than most in the city. I can walk the entire thing in a little over 30 minutes. For a fat guy with an old ankle injury, that's a good place to start for some low-impact exercise. There's one little notch of road not far from my house, a stretch of asphalt about 50 feet long, designed by the city to possibly one day connect to the next subdivision over, but for now, it just ends at a greenbelt. Other than the occasional guest of one of the houses parking there, it isn't used. I like to walk through it, especially in summer, because plants have started to break through the asphalt. One vine, in particular, produced at least a dozen purple flowers. A street sweeper came through and mangled it up, but it regrew and kept blooming. I'm looking forward to seeing it again, as little sprigs of green are already popping through the cracks now. Just like the theoretical destruction of the Alamo, this plant exploits the crack in the street. Left unchecked, it and other plant life would continue to a point where the street would be lost amongst the plants, and perhaps eventually disintegrate altogether. Every time I look at that little plant, slowly struggling to survive, I think about how this is going on all over the planet. When we were up in New England, we drove to Fort McClary in Maine. I have a photo of a flower growing upside down out of a crack in the fort. I have another photo taken in Tulum, Mexico, on our 10th anniversary, of a palm tree growing out the side of a cliff, a full-size palm tree, the bottom extending out of the cliff for a few feet, then taking an almost 90-degree turn upwards. A couple of podcasts ago, I talked about the winter storm that hit Texas in February. A lot of the warm weather plants were killed. My friend lost 5 trees that grew citrus or avocados. The grocery store we go to had large agave cacti growing in various places in the parking lot that would bloom large yellow flowers in the spring. They are now all giant lumps of grayish-brown dead vegetation killed in the snow. However, last time I went, out of the decaying corpses were new agave starting all over. Nature finds a way to survive despite anything humanity does. Nature will wiggle its way into spaces we don't even consider in order to grow and thrive. It was doing it long before we ever got here, and it will be doing it long after we're gone. Before the first vestiges of humanity became sentient, the Earth went through at least one period of extreme heat that rendered most of the surface a desert. It also went through periods where ice covered at least a third of the surface. That happened without you driving your combustion engine vehicles, flame grilling your steaks that came from methane producing cows, or riding in your private jet to the middle of the Pacific to attend a climate change conference. The Earth will change from one harsh environment to another, and there's not a damn thing you can do about it. Hell, some scientists believe we're overdue for another ice age. Imagine all of Canada and the upper third of the continental United States under glaciers. No more Chicago, Seattle, New York, Toronto. Northern Europe and Asia are also covered. If that's what the Earth wants to do, then that's what's going to happen. And again, there ain't a goddamn thing you can do to prevent it. The Earth doesn't give a fuck that you recycle or plant trees. It'll freeze your ass whenever it wants. And don't give me your virtue-signaling, tree-hugging bullshit either. Oh, you bought an electric car, so that makes you better than everyone else? Where does all that electricity come from? coal-burning power plants? Great job. All you did was disguise your carbon footprint by causing the power plant to burn more coal to produce the electricity for your car. Oh, you put solar panels on your house because you're such a good person? By 2050, a little more than a quarter century away, there will be an estimated 78 million metric tons of burned out dead solar panels that can't be put in a landfill because of toxic minerals and chemicals. Congratulations, you just created a completely different toxic waste problem. Even during the less harsh times, the planet is thoroughly unforgiving to its inhabitants. All of these things happened long before the first human eyes ever looked up at the sky. Tectonic plates move, sliding past each other, causing earthquakes. The mountain ranges you see, gushing over their grandeur, they were caused by the catastrophic upheaval of those tectonic plates smashing into one another. You wouldn't be able to ski down your snowy mountainside if the planet hadn't done so. And you better hope you are never anywhere near a powerful seismic event that causes ruptures in the ground for you to fall to your death or a building to collapse on you. For that matter, if you do happen to be skiing down a mountainside, you better damn well hope an avalanche doesn't bury you and anything else in front of it in a frozen tomb. How could an earthquake get any worse? Well, how about if it happened under the ocean, causing a tsunami to crash into nearby land? Imagine a major tectonic shift. You feel the ground shake as you sit on the beach. Not long after, you watch animals running away from the beach. You stare in fascination as the water quickly recedes from the shoreline. The next thing you know, you're staring at a 30-foot wall of water coming at you as you scramble in vain to higher ground. Even without human negligence, forest fires occur. Trees are not immortal. Their foliage falls off every autumn. Pests, disease, or old age causes the trees themselves to fall to the ground. All that death piles up in a forest. Catch a dry spell and a lightning strike catches the kindling on fire, or sometimes even spontaneous combustion occurs. It's only in more recent human history, as we have placed large communities in the line of danger, that we have seen how massive the death and destruction can be. We fear it. We fight against it. We go to great lengths to keep it from happening, yet nature will do it anyway, because the Earth needs to do so. It needs to get rid of the deadwood. It needs to renew the growth in the forest. It doesn't give a fuck whether you just built a $1 million home in the middle of it. Of course, once that fire does go through, before the new growth has time to get its grip on the soil, be wary of any rain that will cause a mud flow sliding down a hill, ready to bury alive anyone caught in the way of its deadly sludge. For our 20th anniversary, Gina and I went to Hawaii. One day we took a boat over to the island of Lanai to visit a cat sanctuary, podcast 116. Once we got to the island, our tour loaded us onto a shuttle. About 15 minutes into the ride, our driver announced that we were traveling through the crater of a dormant volcano. When you think volcano, you kind of think Hawaii, don't you? Maybe the Pacific Ring of Fire? Did you know over 10% of the active volcanoes in the world are in the United States? Hell, just ask the people of Mount St. Helens in Washington if there are active volcanoes on the mainland. Some of the more massive eruptions from the 1,500 active volcanoes around the world are said to spew out more greenhouse gases into the atmosphere in a single eruption than created by people in the entirety of human history. Clouds from eruptions have been known to circle the globe and cause heavier snowfalls in winter. That's all coming from what is basically an Earth zit. Then there's the current biggest cause of natural disaster consternation, the tropical cyclone. Over in the Pacific, they call them typhoons. In the Atlantic, they're hurricanes. Send a big one directly at a major American city that's already built below sea level, with a local government that's never bothered to correct a known problem with its levees, and idiot politicians who can't even follow their own evacuation plans, and you have a recipe for mass death and destruction. Gina and I got out of New Orleans about 3 hours before the edge of Katrina hit. I'll have to tell that story sometime. Hurricanes are nasty business, especially for people who insist on living near the ocean. San Antonio is kind of lucky in that respect. It's far enough inland to where even the worst hurricane is reduced to heavy thunderstorms, similar to the ones we naturally get in the spring and summer anyway. That's not to say they aren't still scary, but for us, it's something we're familiar with and are often prepared for, with the possible exception of flooding that I'll get to later. The problem with hurricanes is they combine so many horrors of nature. You have the heavy rains, high winds, lightning, and often hail all together barreling down on you. People talk about how damaging they have been in recent generations, but you have to understand, as the human population grows and more people insist on living near the coast, it's only reasonable to expect greater loss of life and property. Now, let me take apart the horrible aspects of the hurricane. About 5 years ago, San Antonio got one of those regular storms I mentioned earlier. Hail is pretty common with these storms, sometimes as big as golf balls. This time around, they were as big as tennis balls, and caused $1.4 billion in damage in the city. If you look up the news story online, you'll see a photo of a car with holes in its back window, so big I probably couldn't cover them with my hands. The photo was taken at our grocery store about 2 miles away. I hate to think what would happen if any living thing would get hit with something like that. But hey, just another gift from Mother Earth, right? Another aspect of hurricanes, but as with everything else, not exclusive to them, is lightning strikes. A couple of years ago, lightning struck the building I worked in. Scared the shit out of us. You get used to seeing lightning and then hearing the thunder. But when you're ground zero for both, you really understand how violent it is. There are an estimated 25 million lightning strikes per year on Earth, causing approximately 240,000 incidents resulting in injury and about 2,000 deaths per year, according to National Geographic. Keep in mind that even though you have anywhere from a 70 to 90% chance of surviving a lightning strike, you also have an 80% chance of permanent injury. Recently, a heartbreaking and graphic video capturing a lightning strike of a tree in India made its way around social media. 4 people were standing under the tree in the rain. Only 3 survived. ancient civilizations thought lightning was some power of the gods. But it's really just the earth indiscriminately doing her thing. The heavy rains cause floods. I guess I've been very fortunate personally. While I've been in San Antonio all my life, I've always lived in the higher elevation places. About a year before Gina and I got married, I got a call from work telling me not to come in because they were closing the office due to severe weather. I knew it was raining pretty heavily, but I didn't realize how bad it had gotten in low-lying areas. The image San Antonians will always remember is the video of an entire house floating across the screen. This happens with all kinds of heavy storm events, but the massive amounts of moisture in a hurricane practically guarantees Mother Earth pissing all over her inhabitants and attempting to flush them into her oceans. The heavy winds I will talk about in conjunction with another horror that comes with hurricanes, but is also rampant throughout the plains. Tornadoes. For me, tornadoes are the most beautifully terrifying thing I can imagine. The rare times I have nightmares about natural disasters, it's tornadoes. I would love to photograph a tornado. It looks so beautiful. But I also never want to have the opportunity. I am more afraid of dying in a tornado than I am of dying of COVID. Yet, on average, tornadoes only kill about 70 people per year in the United States. But tell that statistic to the people of Jarrell, Texas, who lost 27 of their fellow citizens to a mile-wide tornado in a matter of minutes in 1997. I only had to hear one story from a person who helped with the after effects of a tornado, explaining what happened to some animals that got caught up in the tornado and thrown through a chain link fence. No, I don't mean against a chain link fence. I mean through. I don't ever need to hear another story about the hazards of getting caught by the vortex. Not only do you have to worry about getting caught up in the cyclone itself, you also have to worry about objects becoming deadly projectiles. When a piece of wood, combined with tornado force winds, can be thrown through a brick wall, you know you don't want to be anywhere near a tornado. Thanks, Mother Earth. And don't even get me started on blizzards and snowstorms. Or just go back to podcast 134 to hear how I feel about the once-in-a-lifetime freezing weather we experienced in Texas, which is still nothing compared to what most Northerners deal with every fucking year. That's just the day-in, day-out functions of the Earth itself. That doesn't even include the other life forms that Mother Earth tossed us in with. Let's talk about just a few of our fellow animals. Let's start with the same animals in our class, mammals. What are the deadliest mammals out there? Wolves? Hardly. Only 10 deaths per year on average. Lions? The king and queen of the jungle are only responsible for about 22 deaths a year. Elephants? Oh, now we're getting into some numbers. 500 deaths a year for the largest land mammal. For those of you who keep up with these things, that matches the toll for the hippopotamus. What's the deadliest? Dogs. 35,000 deaths a year worldwide, and 99% of all worldwide rabies deaths are caused by dogs. That statistic doesn't even crack my top 10 reasons that I'm a cat person. Oh, by the way, on average, rhinos attack humans less than 2 times per year and are very rarely fatal. See? Just leave us the fuck alone and you'll be fine. And yes, humans are responsible for about 437,000 homicides per year. That's not including war, suicides, or accidental deaths. But we all know about the failings of the human race. This episode is about our own planet plotting against us. So, let's get away from mammals and get into other classes of life on this planet. Sharks? They barely register at only about 6 deaths a year. Comparatively, crocodiles are responsible for about 1,000 deaths per year. Even that's nothing compared to the 100,000 deaths attributed to snake bites. Now we're getting into some numbers. But don't forget, the deadliest poison comes from a frickin' frog. Yeah. A cute little yellow-orange frog in South America, about 2 inches long, has enough venom to kill 10 people. But you want to get into the really deadly stuff. Let's talk about disease-carrying vermin and insects. 10,000 deaths per year are caused by the sleeping sickness spread by the tsetse fly. But the good news is, that has recently been on the decline. So how about the 750,000, 750,000 people killed by diseases spread by mosquitoes each year? In the 14th century, the Black Plague killed around 50 million people in Europe, Asia, and Africa over the course of 7 years. That's a pandemic to be afraid of. For a very long time, it was believed rats spread the disease. But a recent study postulates that fleas and ticks carried by humans were the true cause of the spread. More specifically, it was bacteria on the fleas and ticks that caused the deaths. That's right. All the diseases that have been, are, or will continue to afflict humanity all come from our blessed Mother Earth. You can thank her for all of them. Influenza, polio, pneumonia, bronchitis, tuberculosis, AIDS, hepatitis, herpes, syphilis, gonorrhea, smallpox, SARS, Ebola, leprosy, cholera, and you can most certainly give her full credit for the coronavirus. Thanks a lot, you bitch. Oh yeah. Let me get this off my chest real quick. I'm going to go off the rails here. I apologize. In March of last year, I received an email from HR stating that one of my coworkers had tested positive for the coronavirus. Due to HIPAA regulations, government regulations, they could not tell me the identity of the coworker. All they would tell me is that I did not have a high risk of contagion. After sending us all to work from home and me doing my 2 weeks of isolation, I finally heard through the grapevine who it was because he talked to the guy I sat next to at the office. Bull fucking shit, I was not at high risk. He regularly came over to our section every day. 2 days before he tested positive, I stood 2 feet away from him in the men's room washing our hands and had a conversation with him. Just because he wasn't in our department doesn't mean we're not at high risk, but they can't tell us details because of government regulations. He was one of the first 10 people to test positive for COVID in San Antonio when all this began. He caught it from his mother, who was one of the first 5 people to test positive in San Antonio. If the fucking government was so goddamn concerned about an outbreak, then I should have known who I was at risk from immediately. They didn't give a flying fuck about my well-being then. Now you want me to reveal my medical history to the public in the form of a vaccine passport? Fuck you. You didn't give a fuck about me at the onset of all this. You gave gorillas the vaccine long before I ever became eligible. Don't give me your fucking bullshit that my private records are suddenly vital to public inspection. Government doesn't give a flying fuck about you. And getting back on track, Mother Earth doesn't give a flying fuck about you either. You are one of 8 billion animatronic dirt clods traipsing around her apartment. When your body ceases to function, sweet little Mother Earth will let you rot just like anything else. She'll let some of her other creatures devour your putrefied corpse, digest you, and shit you out to feed the very plants you think human existence is going to destroy. In fact, how about you balance the whole nurturing Mother Earth routine with her other side? The brutal, codependent, psycho bitch Earth that she really is. This is the Raging Rhino Podcast. You'll hear from me again.